Welcome to the Disney Magic Podcast. I'm Joel.
And I'm Megan.
And we like to talk about Disney things.
We do.
Specifically this week, we're going to be talking about Finding Nemo.
Finding Nemo.
Finding Nemo was released May 30th, 2003. And if you weren't around May, June, July, August, September, October, November of 2003.
And then most of 2004 as well when it came out on DVD.
Let me just tell you, Finding Nemo was the biggest thing ever.
Oh man, it was Frozen levels of intense.
Holy hell.
Maybe not merchandising wise, but otherwise.
I mean, that's hard to sell fish.
Yeah, the fish. I
mean, so, but no, it was crazy.
You can't sell princess dresses that look like fish. Actually, I really like a princess dress. I want to like clownfish princess dress, please. I'd like to place my order, Disney. Thanks.
And actually, yeah, it was huge, and it was everywhere. It surpassed Lion King to become the highest grossing animated film of all time.
Yeah.
So it beat out a 10-year record. And then I think Toy Story 3 beat it out, so.
I think so. And then I think Frozen beat that out.
Yes. Frozen did. And Frozen's probably going to stay for a little bit.
Yeah.
But no, it was insane and everywhere.
Yeah.
And I just remembered, like opening up the newspaper and just like, because Box Office Mojo didn't exist yet, just like watching
everywhere,
watching it climb forever and ever and ever and ever. And I didn't see it in theaters.
Did you not? I did, and then I didn't see it for a long time until I came out on DVD, and then I saw it 27,000 times.
Yes, because it's the highest grossing DVD of all time.
Is it really?
Okay,
That being said, I totally own this one.
Well.
So,
yeah. So you contributed to it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have like 8 DVDs. You've got the big stock.
So as of January 2005, it is definitely the best-selling DVD of all time. After that, it starts to get into like it's DVD/Blu-ray sales for big stuff.
Right.
And they're not separated yet. So, you know, it's not the best-selling home video of all time anymore, but there is probably, if you want to dig through and specific out, you know, what it was, you know, it might be the highest-selling DVD of all time. It was, like, right nice in a DVD sweet spot. Although it did come out on VHS.
Oh, did it? Oh, that's weird. Yeah.
Because the statistics were 80% of the day one sales were DVDs.
Oh, man.
Which means it was an 8 million copy day one release.
Yeah.
And about 20% of that was VHS.
Wow, that's weird.
Good number of Finding Nemo VHS out there still.
I do think that this was one of my first DVDs. I think this in, like, Pirates of the Caribbean and that terrible Phantom of the Opera adaptation. Because my parents got me a DVD player and some DVDs for Christmas, and they were like, Megan likes Phantom of the Opera. And I was like, oh, God. Thanks, Mom.
Well, it was... In addition to it being shown a lot in school, it ended up being, like, the movie that everybody had. It was like, this doesn't have swearing in it.
Yeah.
It's safe to show in school.
Yeah, or at church or, you know, like, any sort of daycare situation.
Yeah.
It was pretty...
But in addition to that, it was like the one a lot of people would use to like show off their brand new DVD player with the better quality everything.
Lots of loops of Finding Nemo in like Best Buy. Yeah.
And so, and I mean, my aunt had it, and we watched it because like we got to see the pretty water on the new TV with the new DVD player.
Yep.
So, speaking of the water, just to talk about the animation in this movie for a second.
Insane.
Because of the water, and because of the light going through the water and hitting the fish and reflecting differently based on where they were in the depth, it took about 4 days to render a frame of film. A frame of film is about 1/24th of a second of film.
We would also like to mention that there are crazy enough to make a damn sequel to this thing.
So, that's crazy. The movie came out, like I said, in 2003. Work first began on this movie in 1997. So, from the initial pitch and doing, because they did a ton of research
on this
movie. I mean, Pixar's famous for doing lots of research ahead of time, but they did a ton of research.
Yeah, when it's actually like regular looking fishy shaped things. Mm. That takes a lot more effort.
Yeah, and so just they went, I think they went to the reef.
Yeah, yeah, just, they took just, a snorkeling trip. Yeah. I remember because this is, again, one of the 8 DVDs I own. So I remember, I've seen all the special features at least 8 times. My favorite part is in the commentary, Mr. Ray pops in and sings an extra little song that's terrible and cute. That's how many times I've watched this movie.
So, but yeah, they did that. Andrew Stanton, this is his first directing job from Pixar. He said he initially got the idea going to the dentist as a kid and seeing all the fish tanks. Because yeah. Every dentist has a fish tank.
My dentist totally did not have a fish tank.
Well, I'm pretty sure that was just a crazy
man. Really
got his hand on some dental equipment.
Although, they did have, like, the little prize thing, you know, like you were good at the doctor's sort of thing, was totally, like, an undersea treasure chest. So, maybe he's just making up for it.
That's his nautical theme.
Yeah, there you go. That's as nautical themed as he got. Maybe he hated fish. I don't know.
I don't know. But he always envisioned those fish wanting to get back to the sea, and that was the spark of story. And so apparently he eventually, when he made his initial pitch to John Lasseter, and he'd been thinking about this since he was like, you know, 12 and going to the dentist, and so he had this hour-long pitch with like visual aids, and he did different voices for different characters and bouncing around, and he finally finishes up, and Lasseter goes, "You had me at fish."
John Lasseter and I have entirely opposite stances on pretty much all things that I think would make a good movie, because I would not have gone with fish and cars. But they worked out. So
this was also kind of one of the first ones just in the culture where it was like Pixar makes good movies.
Yeah.
Only good movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was getting to be the point where you could be like, oh, what's the next Pixar movie?
Mm-hmm.
It was a
household name by this point.
Yeah, it was a thing. But anyway, let's jump into the movie.
Finding Nemo starts out really depressing.
Yeah, you guys thought Up is sad? Mm.
No, Up is way sadder.
No.
People.
I don't care.
Up is way sadder.
Up is a man who lives a long, happy life with his wife. This is a person who gets his wife eaten away from him and all of his children, all 399 of his children.
I think we just watched a Star Wars or Star Trek episode about this that we're talking about, where is it better to live a long life and be kind of sad or die young and be happy the whole time? We literally just watched a Star Trek episode about this conundrum. But no, I still think Up is sadder. But this is really sad. It's just a little harder to feel emotional about it because it is fish.
Okay, all right, well, how about this then?
Also, I've seen it 27,000 times.
Yeah, you have seen it 27,000
times. So I am a little numb to the sadness. It's still sad, but
how about this then? So when they were trying to be able to have the fish invoke human emotion,
yeah,
they kind of can't look at fish for that because fish look kind of dumb.
Yeah, they do look really, really
so they actually use dogs.
Hmm, I can see
so
that.
That was
they've got those eyebrow ridges mm-hmm. the dogs
yeah.
have.
The way that dogs would react to things, that's the kind of thing they'd have. So it wouldn't be quite human, but it would still be very familiar.
Yeah, it kind of makes a little bit sad.
Yeah.
But dogs can't have 390 some eggs.
Not with that attitude.
If they try real hard, I guess.
This whole story as to Coral dying and everything was actually supposed to be slowly revealed through flashbacks.
Oh, God.
Spotted throughout the movie.
Ugh.
But that eventually got scrapped just because Marlon was kind of this worrywart for no reason for the first half of the movie.
Right, yeah.
So, although, like, in this first half of the movie, I really liked the characterization because he is worried, and he is too worried and too protective.
He is charmingly so, though.
But he's also still a good dad.
Yeah.
Like, he still jokes with his kid and
they have fun.
Indulges his, like, the kid's very excited about something dumb, and he's like, let's indulge this. And,
yeah.
You know, so it's really good, because it would be a really easy thing to just make him, like, a difficult father.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's not.
No, not at all.
So, at which point I wrote, oh, this is going to be another movie about parenthood, isn't it?
Yeah.
Apparently all Pixar does is make secret movies about parenthood and make some cartoons.
I would say that half of The Incredibles is about parenthood.
Yeah.
The other half of The Incredibles is about completely ignoring parenthood and doing dangerous stuff.
I mean, there's definite, like, responsibilities of parenthood and what it means to be a family in Incredibles.
I don't think any of the Toy Story movies are about...
The Toy Story movies are completely about parenthood. They are about your kids growing up and not needing you anymore. And
I being able to cope with that.
Two and three are 100% about parenthood. Like, one's not that much.
One's not that much.
This is the first movie they made. Nobody was a parent yet.
Well, yeah, but like...
No, two and three are absolutely not parenthood.
Let me think.
So, and just like that...
Up is about parenthood in the worst way.
Yeah, Up is about parenthood.
Brave is about parenthood.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I'm trying to think.
No, they're all about parenthood. I don't know about Cars.
Cars is not
I don't know if I can squeeze Cars 2 into being a parenthood movie.
No, I don't think Cars is.
But, like, for the bulk of it, so much of this is about parenthood.
That's true.
And
are we missing anything? I'm trying to think.
I mean, I'm sure we are.
I'm sure we are. So Ratatouille right now is listening to this
not really
grumpy.
About parenthood.
Ratatouille is not about parenthood. Well, actually, Ratatouille is about kind of defying parenthood in some ways, I guess.
Yeah. So, but this is about parenthood. Monsters, Inc. was about parenthood.
This is definitely
about parenthood. Toy Story 2 was like, that's really kind of about parenthood. Monsters, Inc. was like, this is straight up parenthood, 1,000%.
Well, yeah.
Just parenthood. And this was like, oh, this is about parenthood. Well, this is about being scared to give up your kid.
This is the most obvious one about parenthood, though, clearly. So, yeah, we get the sad backstory, and then we get the first day of school.
Yes. He's very excited about it.
I really like Mr. Ray. That's really random. He's such a small character, but I really like him. I had a science teacher in high school who reminded me a lot of Mr. Ray. Just, like, super into and excited and, like, sometimes over-explains things without any of us understanding what the hell you're talking about. Yeah.
I like this scene. I like a lot of Pixar scenes because they do a lot of movies without human characters with human characters very much in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So I like these scenes where it's the fish or the monsters or the toys or the bugs doing something totally human.
Yeah.
And like they're going in the schoolyard and they're playing catch or they're playing like hide and seek. And it's like, it's like the humans do, but it's fish. And so they have one of those like just like three quick little one note jokes somewhere every time. And I'm like, I look forward to those.
Those are cute. Then we get our standard the ocean is really damn pretty scene. And this is so pretty. And it still looks so, so good.
Yeah.
And this was so long ago now. This was over a decade ago
now.
Yeah,
this was a long time ago. And this wasn't as good as they could make it.
Right.
They made it better and they had to scale it back so that people wouldn't think they just filmed the ocean.
Yeah. It's really beautiful. The, like, lighting effects are perfect. The fish are beautiful. They've got that, like, shimmery, shiny look to them.
Mm-hmm.
And all the little, like, coral beds and reefy plants and everything's colorful and nice.
And that's why it took 96 days for one frame of this movie to render.
Worth it. For that,
for one,
like,
second of this movie to render.
Yeah, that, like, 5-second scene alone. Worth it.
And so Marlon learns that they're... I guess they're going on a field trip.
They're going on a field trip,
like,
to the drop-off.
I just feel like they kind of go on field trips every day at this school.
Well, I mean, they don't really learn math or anything. I think this is more of a life class. It's a biology class, primarily.
I mean, it's a school of fish joke.
Yes.
So they're going to the drop-off, taking a field trip to the drop-off, and some of the kids sneak away. And I like that these sneak away kids are still nice kids. It's not like the punk kids.
Yeah, they're
like,
not like mean or bullies. They're just
nobody like
stupid.
Yeah.
One of them is obnoxious. I like that joke a lot.
So because this movie was so ingrained, at least at our age and the 5 years up and down from our age. So there's like several lines in here for just like the he will be my squishy line and I'm obnoxious line.
I'm obnoxious.
They're just like
I'm so intolerant.
Ingrained into just general lexicon now.
Yeah.
It's almost weird to see them happen in context of this movie.
I know. I'm like, I've heard that a lot. That's weird.
Yeah. So he goes and he touches the butt.
Yep.
And it gets in trouble with his dad.
That's still funny.
That is still funny. That still might be the funniest joke.
It's like the most stupid thing, but it's still funny.
He touched the butt.
He touched the butt. Something about that kid's voice acting is just perfect.
Yeah, that's great. And then, so there was this dentist who was just scuba diving. I guess scuba diving is his hobby.
Yeah, he's into fish.
And
so,
he
goes out to the reef.
Captures a clownfish that he sees while scuba diving.
Well, he thinks he can't swim very well because he's got that little fin.
Yeah. So, that was always weird to me that, like...
That's what he does casually.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if you live, like, in Sydney proper and you want to go outside, I feel like that's probably the most fun thing to do on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Snorkeling.
I mean, I remember... like, the first or maybe second time I saw this, and I didn't pick up that it was the dentist himself. I thought this was just somebody whose livelihood was capturing fish for, like, dentist tanks.
That's oddly specific.
Or for, you know, like, pet stores and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
Is this legal? I feel like that's not legal, to take a fish off the barrier
off the reef.
I feel like it's ecological preserve or something, isn't it?
Maybe. I mean, how far off? Because they went to the drop-off, and so...
That's true. They might just be like, we're on the edge. I will take the small fish.
You just, like, stand there and wait for them to swim away and grab them.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know.
I feel like... I mean, it's not like he doesn't take good care of his fish.
Yeah, and he's maybe, like... I mean, he's probably, like, 70 feet off the reef, like...
Probably not that far. Nemo can't swim that well.
Maybe, but he's, like...
He's a little ways off. He's enough off that I could be like, yeah, okay, he's not on the reef anymore. But still, I feel like I don't know if that's okay.
So we chase the boat and run into Dory.
Okay, but first, he's panting this whole time, and I get that it's for effect, but it makes no sense. Like, fish don't breathe that way. It's gills.
Yeah, but I mean, like.
I know, but I noticed it this time, and it bothered me.
Well, do you want to just, like, get out all of your fish don't do that qualms?
No, that was the one thing that I was like, because, like, I don't know. There's, like, no score in that scene at all. It's all just, like, quiet. And I know it's perfect, but I just thought about it this time. I was like, wait a minute. I didn't even think about it. The first 2,700 times I viewed this.
There was one time, and this was the first time I noticed the movie, there's one time, and it's around the whale scene. Where they break the water and gasp for air.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I believe I also have that in my notes. Actually, I had all of the annoying breathing problems in this one, apparently. I don't know.
Well, the thing is, like, at this scene is also the one where he's, like, looking over the water and he goes down into the water to take a breath.
He takes a gulp of air, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, we get Dory.
We run into Dory.
Dory.
I
like Dory.
Everybody likes Dory.
No one should dislike Dory because she's delightful.
Everybody likes Dory. Dory suffers from short-term memory loss.
Dory suffers from all sorts of memory loss. All flavors.
So, and Dory has seen the boat, so we're following Dory, and we meet Bruce. We meet Bruce really quickly after we meet Dory.
I kind of forgot that, yeah.
Like, it was just like a 1-2. And so, watching it, I was like, I knew they had to get the mask. The mask had fallen off. Yeah. We saw the mask fall off the boat. There's a special cutaway to specifically see that. And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, did I miss where they put the mask? Because I felt like that came from. But no, we meet Bruce
right
there. Bruce is a shark. Yeah. Bruce is named Bruce because the mechanical shark that they had making Jaws was named Bruce.
Yeah.
Bruce is also the one of three characters named Bruce from three different movies, all to come out within about 60 days of each other, because this movie, Bruce Almighty, came out, and the Hulk came out, the original Eric Van Hulk movie.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be Batman.
No, Batman's movies came out.
God, you know, for
three
somebody,
Bruce movies without any Batman movies come out.
That's pretty impressive. You know, for so many fictional characters being named Bruce, I don't know a single Bruce in real life, do you?
No, I know a Wayne.
Close enough. Who voices Bruce?
I don't know who voices
Bruce. I love his voice, and whatever the effect they put over it is really, really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, they go to a
Fish are friends, not food.
Fish Eaters Anonymous meeting.
Yeah.
And it's delightful and silly, and it's in the middle of a minefield.
It is. It's a very silly joke that just works.
It just,
and yeah. It kind of furthers the plot, but it really feels like a joke somebody had and then, got crunched into this plot.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody said fish are friends, not food, and he's like, well, all right, make space.
But that's fine, because it's silly.
They eventually escape.
So here's the thing. So they find the mask. They fight over the mask.
Yeah.
And it hits Dory in the nose, which causes a tiny nosebleed that makes Bruce go crazy.
Yes.
Because he smells blood.
I would also note that fish don't have nose. Okay, continue.
It's going to be the whole
I'm
movie.
I'm telling you. All of the breathing nasal problems in this movie.
We're going to have to watch some non-cartoons if you want to keep doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we've managed to go through the whole Disney thing and a good chunk of the Pixar's without having to point out the inconsistencies with the fact that these are cartoons. Now all of a sudden you can't handle it when it's fish.
I mean, we also had problems with the Enchanted Castle, and I don't think this is much better. So,
so they have basically a chase sequence where Bruce is chasing them through the sunken submarine.
Yeah.
And the end result is that a nuke hits a mine, all the mines blow up, and it blows up this giant minefield, and it's like a fairly spectacular set piece event.
It's a really intense explosion.
It is. It's like an intense fight or chase scene, you know, very quick, very fast paced, a lot of camera movement, very intense, results in a giant explosion, and it all comes to the fart junk.
It does.
Because one of the puns, it makes one little bubble. And this pelican thinks it's another pelican farted.
Yep.
And I think that's, other than he touched the butt, my favorite thing is that this giant chase sequence with an explosion at the end.
To make a tiny little fart joke.
Is a tiny fart joke.
Tiny little fart joke. We get the anglerfish next, yeah?
This is where we cut to,
The tank.
We cut to the tank. Nemo gets dumped in the tank.
Yeah.
With where he meets the bubble guy, Flo, the reflection. I don't know their names. Peach is the starfish.
Peach is the starfish.
And I remember that because I had a...
Bloat is the blowfish.
Yeah. And Gil is the super cool, mysterious fish that lives in a skull. Voiced by Willem Dafoe.
Gil is so much less convincing to me as an adult than he was when I was younger. I mean, I guess I wasn't a kid when this movie came out, but I was significantly younger, and I was like, what a cool character. He's so cool. And now I'm just like, you're an idiot, boy. I'm so unimpressed with your cool fish routine. I feel the same way, though, watching Grease. It's like, John Travolta, you're an idiot. Please go away.
When you don't have time for the cool guy in a movie, you know you've grown up.
I'm old. Yep.
So we meet them.
It's like endangering children isn't cool, dude. That's not cool.
This is where they wake up from the explosion fart, and they drop the mask into the darkness of the sea, which must have been just the best part to animate after all of this.
I know, right?
Painful water.
Inky blackness, let's go.
Just we had people talk. We didn't have to animate anything, just a dark screen.
Yep.
So,
anglerfish time.
Yes. So, creepy anglerfish.
Anglerfish are the coolest and scariest things.
They're pretty scary. And I just really like that the end result is that they needed the light so that they could read the mask.
Yeah, so they could read the mask. Yep.
And I gotta say, Marlin goes toe-to-toe, metaphorically, with a lot of, scary-looking fish.
He does.
One, the one at the beginning that ended up eating coral.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of really intense fish for a little clownfish to take on.
Tiny clownfish.
So, good job. So they head to P. Sherman 42 Wallaby Way, Sydney.
I will remember that forever.
Yep.
Great. Yep.
And no, two addresses. My home address and that one.
Oh, I know that one. And the Stick Stickley address from when we were
yeah,
kids.
Yeah, no, I remember. I remember Six Sacred, but I didn't watch enough Nickelodeon. Right, I guess I also remember 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Oh, yeah. Write to me, Stick, P.O. Box 963, New York City, New York State, 10108. I still remember it. I have a stupid memory for those sorts of things, so thanks, Finding Nemo, for adding to that.
T-shirt and 42 all the way, Sydney.
Yep.
So this is where they have the induction ceremony for for Nemo.
Might want to hug a loogie. I like this scene. It's silly.
That's the thing. It's a very silly scene. It's a very funny scene. It's called Mount Wanahakalugi, and it has Sharkbait Hoo-Ha-Ha in it.
Sharkbait Hoo-Ha-Ha.
But the thing is, it opens up with Nemo sleeping, and the little cleaning shrimp throws one rock in there, and then throws another rock, and then throws like 28 rocks in there. Which just, this time around, just tickled me into that in that one scene. So, that was my favorite part of the scene this time.
He does actually say, follow me in French, by the way.
Yeah.
Suivez moi. Yeah.
So,
What is his name? Little Shrimp. I have in my notes. I don't remember.
I don't remember. All I remember is Peach and Flo, the reflection is
don't
Flo.
Don't be very helpful. No, I don't remember his name either. I would guess Pierre, but I don't think that's right. I'll remember it.
So, they invite Nemo into their tank hood. and this is where they have like a little Mission Impossible rundown of the escape plan.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad escape plan, all things considered.
Not terrible. Very smart fish.
Yeah. When they this is when they're they go out the window. This is where the Pizza Planet truck is because it drives across the street as they're
It's a nice
fish
scene.
Bag
it's
rolling.
Well done.
Yeah, it is, and it's a nice little like a spy mission. You know, emulation kind of thing. So it was good. Back to Marlin and Dory. There's a lot of that in this movie.
I had totally forgotten about the impression fish. The, like, school of fish that does impression. I totally forgot about it.
That's John Ratzenberger.
I know. I don't know how I'd forgotten about it, but it does make me laugh.
It's really funny. And, like, you know what? This movie actually, I don't know if I've seen it too many times for it to be funny, but it's not as funny as Monsters, Inc. is.
Yeah.
Just not as, I mean, it also doesn't have Billy
Crystal. It's not quite as goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not as much, there's not as much, physical humor in it. They're fish. I don't know how much pratfalling they can do.
Anything with a kid under the age of 3 is going to be funny by sheer virtue of, kid under the age of 3, so.
Yeah.
That helps. Nemo's not as funny, because he's
But
child.
These impression fish are very funny.
They are funny.
And there's a lot of little things, like when they made a ship, they had an extra plank, and a little tiny fish jumped over.
And they're like shooting little fish cannons.
Mm-hmm.
So cute.
And when they made an octopus, and Dory said a crab, and close enough.
So I got to take the EAC to Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And
they have to go through the trench
not
over it.
But Marlin doesn't catch that because he's grumpy.
And Dory can't remember why.
So they go over the trench and it's full of jellyfish.
Yes.
This is really beautiful too.
It is.
Also terrifying. I have an intense fear of jellyfish. So I hate this scene. Yeah.
No,
okay, so I have an intense fear of being around jellyfish, but I like looking at them. They're pretty.
Yeah.
So
jellyfish are like some of the weirdest creatures on this planet.
They are really strange. Did I ever tell you why I'm afraid of jellyfish?
Because you got stung by them?
No, actually, I've never been stung by a jellyfish.
Well, then.
But, okay, so when I was 12, we went snorkeling, and I did not have my glasses on, so I couldn't see, anything, so it's pretty much useless. And I was snorkeling with my mom, doing nothing, and there were tons of jellyfish. And one cannot avoid semi-transparent creatures when one is extremely nearsighted and does not have one's glasses on. So, yeah, I pretty much sprinted back to the boat as fast as my little legs could carry me. And that is why I'm very afraid of jellyfish.
I have been stung by jellyfish.
Oh, have you?
It's awful. Yeah. I've been stung a couple of times by jellyfish, like really bad ones. And I don't care for it. There have been a couple of times just playing in the ocean and there's a wave and I'm like, here comes the wave. And there's a jellyfish coming in my face. Not much I can do about it.
I don't think I've ever seen jellyfish just at the beach. This was in open water on a cruise.
But oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen just jellyfish at the beach other than I think we found one time on line on the sand.
But
no, we
and by lying on the sand, I mean dying terribly. Yes. Sorry, jellyfish.
Well, we used to go to the beach every summer, and, yeah. And there was one time I like plopped down in the sand and they're like, you know, gonna play in it, and I plopped down on a jellyfish.
Oh.
So it's jellyfish laying there dying or dead on the beach, and like zap out. The
last thing he does is sting poor little Joel.
And
terrible.
there was one time where I was swimming in the water and I saw my dad out there, like, you know, just like his head, he's bobbing and flailing. I'm gonna go swim over and say hi to dad. And I swam really close, and it was a jellyfish that had like gotten caught in some sort of like seaweed stuff, and it was like, you know, dark brown seaweed.
And my dad thought it was your dad.
Well, my dad has brown hair, but like, you know, something of a bald spot where I thought the jellyfish was. So I got really close to the really close.
Oh, God.
It was terrifying. So no, I can't. I don't like jellyfish.
That's like the worst case of mistaken dad. Like, you know, every kid has that story where they walk up to a random guy in a grocery store thinking it's their dad. No, Joel swims up to dangerous creatures.
I walk up to my dad and it was a jellyfish.
That's really weird. Oh, that's funny. Good job, Joel. The jellyfish scene, though, is really beautiful.
Jellyfish scene's really pretty. They kind of just, like, suffer through it, though.
Yeah. Well, like, Dory gets pretty badly stung.
Mm-hmm.
And Marlin gets stung enough that he passes out, which is pretty intense because jellyfish, or not jellyfish, clownfish live in anemones.
Yeah.
Which sting standardly.
Mm-hmm. Well, they actually make note of that where, like,
mm-hmm.
he says the little jellyfish stung him. He's just used to it because he lives, you know, in the enemy. So, like, that's a nice little note to make.
Yeah.
And they do, like, they do have this, like, figuring out how to beat the jellyfish field by, like, bouncing on the tops of them. But at the same time, that doesn't work. So they kind of just have to suffer through this jellyfish forest. Which, like, ugh. And so they get out and then they pass out.
Yep. And they go for the first escape attempt in the tank.
Yes, this is the first one that fails.
And it's terrible.
It's just a bummer.
It's very distressing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, risking children's lives, not cool.
Come on, Gil.
Jeez.
So they we wake up and there's Crush the turtle.
Turtles! The turtles are my favorite part of this movie.
Turtles are everybody's favorite part of this
movie. Hands down. They're amazing.
That's voiced by Andrew Stanton.
Dude.
And then we meet Squirt, who's the little turtle.
Yep.
And then Marlin learns about good parenting from turtle.
It's nice to see Marlin as a dad, because we actually don't get to see him parent much in this movie. Like, a little bit at the beginning, a little bit at the end, that's about it. Like, you know, we get to see him struggle to try and be a parent,
mm-hmm.
but not actually him interacting with children much, so it's nice to see him tell that little story. It's cute.
Yeah, and that's nice, and to see him, his reaction to Squirt falling out.
They're super lax parenting skills, mm-hmm. yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, that's a good point. I like that. So, it's never actually mentioned in the film, but these turtles are going to Hawaii.
Oh, that's nice.
So, and that's their actual,
Is that their migration pattern? Like, standard?
Mm-hmm. And that's cool. The young turtle shells are modeled kind of like Hawaiian t-shirts.
Yeah, little flowers and things.
Mm-hmm.
I've totally actually seen sea turtles. Tongue-tied. I've totally actually seen sea turtles. They're really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, like up close and swimming. It's neat.
Marlin tells the story of the trials and tribulations he's been through.
Yep, and it spreads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it spreads across the ocean, and eventually Nemo hears it.
Yep.
And that inspires Nemo to stop the filter.
Yep.
So, good job.
Somewhere in here also is the first Kung Fu crab. Man, I love the Kung Fu crabs. They're so dumb.
Oh, yeah.
It escapes from a seagull in this scene, I think.
Yeah, with Nigel.
Such a random thing. Like, yeah, the crabs know Kung Fu because reasons. It's just so funny.
Well, it's like they just, you know, they made the seagulls dumb.
Yeah.
They just did it.
Well, seagulls aren't dumb.
Yes.
Let's be honest.
But pelicans aren't the pillar of intelligence among the bird community.
No, probably not.
So, I mean, it's just...
You can't put, like, a falcon in here. That doesn't make much sense. I guess. And then the falcon comes in. Like, what? hold on a second. Were we having a movie about the ocean in Australia?
So they exit the whirlpool.
Yeah.
Through the whirling vortex is what he
calls
it.
The whirling vortex.
And I like this part. I like that Marlin
enjoys
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Has a good time for 5 seconds. It's mm-hmm. nice.
And then they meet the whale.
Whale.
And then Dory talks.
Speaks whale. It's a little orcish.
Again, to take you back to 2003 to early 2004.
Oh my god.
Speaking whale was hilarious.
Hilarious.
If you were the one that was doing it.
Yes.
Otherwise, it was insanely annoying.
Oh my god. So much whale. So much whale.
Because everybody spoke whale.
All the time.
They have whole cafeteria sessions of just tables of children speaking whale.
Yeah.
Just
dark times. Poor teachers having to put up with our stupid nonsense.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, and I don't know, because we're approximately the same age, and so we experienced all these movies at the same age. So I wonder if people a little bit, younger than us are like, The Incredibles. I've seen that movie thousands and thousands of times.
I think Nemo is particularly bad about it, because, yeah, it sold so many DVDs that, like, nope. There were just a million of them.
But now there's all these pieces, like, Squishy and, like, Speaking Quail and... You know, Just Keep Swimming.
I do think that has happened with other movies that haven't hit us quite at the right age. Like, I think Lion King was probably one of those.
Yeah.
I was a little... We were a little bit young for that, I think. I think probably, 5-10 years older than us at that time were probably just as obnoxious about Lion King.
But so, what I'm wondering is, like, are any of these pieces, like, is she going to speak quail in the sequel? Because you gotta have Dory speak whale. That's an integral part of this movie, right?
Yeah.
Especially if we're finding Dory's family and learning about that, we gotta learn how she learned to speak whale.
Yeah.
It's very important.
I think also it didn't help that when this movie came out, we were teenagers and done with everything because we were teenagers. So.
I guess we were teenagers by then. Wow.
Yeah. Like, it's like probably right now. Preteens to teenagers are really done with Frozen. They're probably really done. No. A lot of adults are really done. So I assume that teenagers are really
I can understand
done.
That. Heather's niece is super, super, super into Frozen.
Yeah.
And I see her just enough that I'm like, yeah, Frozen, it's about time we watch Frozen again. All right, let's go.
But her parents.
Her parents. And also, her brother is super into How to Train Your Dragon.
Aww.
Specifically two, because that's the new one.
Right.
But... That's the
one. It's not a bad choice.
So, those are the two movies that get watched.
Did you have one of those as a kid that you watched over and over and over again?
Like Star Wars, actually, probably.
Star Wars, yeah.
So we're specifically Return of the Jedi because that's the one we got first.
Yeah.
So
I honestly don't remember. I remember wanting like books read over and over and over again, but I didn't have that many VHS tapes, so I don't remember watching them that much. Maybe Great Mouse Detective, but.
I watched Lion King a lot.
Oh, the Rainbow Bright movie. I probably watched that one a lot.
Mom and Dad used to have choir practice at church every Wednesday. And so we would go, and there's a TV at church, and we'd stick a kid in the room to watch it.
Yeah.
And so bring a movie, Joel, because we're going to go to choir practice. And so for about a year and a half, I brought Return of the Jedi every week.
It's not a bad choice.
So I know me some Return of the Jedi pretty well. Don't know all of algebra anymore, but we could quote Return of the Jedi.
That's the important thing, pretty much the straight through. Joel, the important thing.
So they're in the whale.
Yeah.
There's actually, and this is like one of Marlin has several like breaking points in this movie.
I don't blame him.
This is one of them though, and this is like a really nice one where he calls Dory Nemo. He repeats some of the stuff he said earlier in the movie, and specifically calls her Nemo. And then the movie moves on from that really quickly, and that's kind of nice because
we don't have to dwell on it.
Well, like a lot of movies, would have been like, but I'm Dory. You called me Nemo. Why did you do that?
She'll forget it in 6 seconds. It doesn't matter.
But it's nice that, like...
She doesn't question.
Yeah, it's... The movie doesn't, like, shine a light on, like, this is what we did because of reasons and character growth.
No, we know. It's cool.
So, it was really good. And they got the blowhole.
Yep. And the tank is clean.
Yes. The tank is clean. The dentist bought a new...
filter.
Filter. Super filter. And so, they're just kind of done. That was like they played their cards.
Well, and Nemo gets put into a bag, and Darla shows up. Man, I love Darla. I love Darla. Holy crap. She's terrifying.
She's terrifying. She's a demon child.
She's a piranha. She lives in the Amazon. I'm a piranha.
That's another line. Just everywhere. In the Amazon. Just everywhere.
Is that what she says? That like two lines. She literally yells fishy and says, "I'm a piranha," and it's just it's so weird. She's terrifying. She and Sid should get together and hang out.
Oh,
they'd probably be besties.
Just torture the small things of the world.
Soulmates. Yep.
So we also this is where Nigel meets or finds Marlin and Dory.
And just get in my mouth if you want to see your son. Sorry, what? So weird.
So Jeffrey Rush, who voices Nigel, would hold his tongue for all these scenes where he had where he had Marlin and Dory in his mouth. And so they took them and flew. And so Nemo's in a bag, Nemo fakes his own death.
Marlin sees him, thinks he's dead. This scene is really frustrating for me. Because it's been, like, so long. This is a pretty long movie for an anime movie. It's been so long, and all these stupid obstacles, and then, like, ugh. Yeah. This is the point where I was like, we can just turn off and done. If we could just not, that would be great.
Well, so I remembered he faked his own death. Mm-hmm. I remembered that he did it to go to the toilet. I didn't remember, and I remembered him going down the pipes, and that's how he escaped. I didn't remember that it was down the sink, and he was going to the trash can and all that stuff. So, you know, so they're walking, and I'm like, here we go. And then, like, he turns to the trash can, I'm like, this is what? I don't remember this.
There you go.
So, I did have a brief moment of new movie. So after this movie came out, a bunch of companies that, like, manufacture equipment used by, like, water filtration and sewage system things released a bunch of warnings about, like, don't throw your living fish down stuff because, like, kids might want to do that. Like, let me free my fish because all pipes lead to the ocean. And
your fish is going to die.
Oh, yeah, they called it Grinding Nemo.
Oh, God.
Yep.
That's awful. Not great publicity there.
But hopefully they saved some fish.
Fingers crossed.
So, Marlin and...
He's depressed.
Marlin's depressed. Marlin's actually... This is a weird thing to say, but, like, really well depressed. Like, he's...
Yeah.
It's a very good representation.
It's very genuine.
Especially where he thanks Dory for all that she did, that she tried. It's just the defeat of it.
Yeah.
Sad. It's probably one of the saddest parts of the movie.
It's really sad.
And actually...
Especially Dory's part of this.
Dory's part.
Really sad. Which is stupid, because, like, Marlin's part should be sadder, but no, Dory's part's totally sadder. We've seen Marlin sad the whole movie. We've never seen Dory sad, I guess.
This part, they wrote Dory for Ellen DeGeneres with her specifically in mind, because Andrew Stanton saw an episode of Ellen with his wife, and there was one point where she... like, changed the topic 5 times in a single sentence. He's like, there we go, that's what we're using. But they had this scene, and they knew they had this scene part, and this was, like, one of the big reservations of getting Ellen DeGeneres to do this. So what they did was they brought her in so that she could read a test version of it, so she could go home and listen to her test version and really practice on this specific scene. And so they started recording so she could read this test version. And that version was so good, that's what's in the movie.
That's
so
nice.
So there's a couple of...
It's really sad.
...small edits, but that was the test version that she was supposed to use to practice with.
Didn't need the practice, so, apparently.
Good job, Ellen DeGeneres.
Don't remember who Nemo is, and then they find each other, and everything's happy, and then there's nets. This is the other part where I'm like, I'm done. I'm done. Can we just be done?
So, earlier in the movie, they... saved Nemo from getting caught by the dentist for a hot second by everybody jumping in the net and swimming down. Mm-hmm. And so they encouraged all of these tuna fish to do the same thing. And there's this little bit of moment of him having to let his son go to do something that he couldn't.
I think it's primarily to be like a Nemo can do this on his own sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, which is nice, but it's still very frustrating.
It is nice. That's the end. They go back to the school.
Yeah.
There's a couple more la-di-da jokes and stuff. But what's really interesting is, like, so this tuna sequence with the net is the climax of the movie, and it's like, not any more stressful
than the rest of the movie. Than
everything else that he went through. Yeah, he's like, yeah. I mean, this isn't, you know, the airport scene or a giant, like, door scene or they didn't get thrown in a furnace. Like,
yeah.
It's just like, and here's another little obstacle. Which, like, maybe it was... It's
possibly easier to solve than some of the other things.
Yeah, it's like, it was just, it wasn't a big climax to the movie. Which, okay, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still a very good movie.
Definitely.
It is. It's a great movie. It's a great journey movie. Of course, the characterization is wonderful because that's what they're weirdly spot on about.
Always. Yep.
And it is like an incessantly quotable movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I like this movie. I really like this movie. But I feel like I would like this movie more if it hadn't come out at a particular time for me and hadn't been shown to me 700 times.
Yeah.
I feel like I appreciate other Pixar movies more by the sheer fact that I haven't seen them as much. Like, we're going to watch Up, and I'm going to cry the whole time, because I've seen it, like, twice. Yeah. So, but Finding Nemo doesn't make me that sad anymore, because I know exactly what happens in the exact order as it goes along.
Well, it's a really interesting thing, because, yeah, Finding Nemo is the one I have seen the most of. I also saw Finding Nemo in a lot of instances where it was being put on in front of a group of kids to get them to shut up. It wasn't, let me share this wonder with you. No. Stop talking. And
here's Nemo.
Kids didn't care and they talked a lot. And, you know, there was just a lot of, like...
I watched this in French once.
Yeah.
It was weird.
So, like, I feel like I haven't exude as much excitement on this one as I have in movies past, and I feel bad because I feel like it's very much it's not you Finding Nemo, it's me.
Agreed.
Kind of
agreed.
Thing.
I'm glad I'm not alone on that though. Yeah. So it's awkward. I'm like, I'm over this movie, and you're like, no, it's the best movie.
it is a very good movie, but it's when you watch it for the 600th time, you start to, you know, I
know all the jokes.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, we'll watch Martin, you know, Monsters, Inc. or something. Like, and then they said this line, and it was funny, and I liked it.
Yeah, there's certain things from some of those movies that I'm like, okay, I've seen this a lot. It's not that funny anymore. But there's certain things that I'll pick up on that I didn't, you know, I haven't seen in 8 years. And it's like, oh, it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
But Nemo doesn't have that anymore. Except for the impression fish that I didn't remember. That was it.
So, I mean, but it's still a good movie. And it's still like... This is, you know, Pixar only makes good movies, and
pretty
so
much.
Like,
I don't know. I haven't seen Cars 2 yet.
It's a good movie.
Okay.
I'm actually really, I'm really interested to get to Cars 2.
I will warn you. I didn't like Cars 1 that much, so.
On a thumbs up, thumbs down scale, would it still get a thumbs up?
Yeah, it's still get a thumbs up.
All right, that's. I mean.
It's not. God, that character design. Anyway.
Anyway, but we're not watching Cars yet. We're watching Incredibles is the next movie.
Yeah. That's getting a sequel, right?
Yeah, Incredibles is getting a sequel.
Everything gets a sequel. You get a sequel, and you get a sequel, and bees.
I actually didn't like The Incredibles that much when I first saw it.
You didn't like The Incredibles? When's the last time you saw it, though? Do you like it now?
It's okay.
When's the last time you saw it?
I mean, it definitely gets a thumbs up and a thumbs up, thumbs down scale.
So listen in next week for Joel and I thoroughly disagreeing on how much we like a movie.
I mean, we'll see. Like, it's still a good movie, but, like... I don't know. It was the one that I, like, feel like missing the boat on. I was like, because everyone's like, no, no, no. I was like, yeah, it's a good movie. Good job. You guys, Spider-Man 2 came out this year, too. It was like, Incredibles.
Incredibles.
So, I mean, we'll see. And it has been a while because I saw it in theaters. And then it still got, like, shown a couple of times of, like,
these Incredibles. I never saw it in theaters. I rented it first, and then I have maybe seen it 3 or 4 times on TV, and that's it. So,
yeah.
So that probably helps.
Yeah, and so, like, we'll see. It has been, I haven't seen it since early college, late high school.
Okay.
So
maybe your opinion has changed now that it's all, everything's all about parenthood.
Yeah, we'll see. Like, that might be the thing I'm like, well, I connect with this movie again. I understand that life is fleeting and we're all mortal.
Especially when our babies are on fire.
So we'll see. But until next time, bye guys.
Bye everybody. Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing.